So welcome everybody, good evening. It's good to see you all here. I have an intensely packed shear for you tonight, more so than usual. So I'm just gonna dig straight in, but there's a lot of this is coming up now, as I said last week, to the denouement. Can everybody hear me? Is it thumbs up? Can everyone hear? Okay. So this is coming up to the denouement where Rus is actually going to go and approach Boaz in the middle of the night. So we're just a few pesukim away from that. So to build up to that, there's a tremendous amount of material to get that solid. And a lot of what we're going to do tonight, if I can, it's going to be quite mystical. So because of the difficulty in the material, I'm going to ask you really focus in what I'm saying, because I've got like a whole, it's like a whole system that I've set up to try to explain what's going on. So there's a lot cooking tonight. I'll do as many pasukim as I can, but tonight my goal is not to cover pasuk ground, rather to get clarity on the difficulty of the actual data itself. Okay? So with that in mind, is everyone okay? So basically, Jeff, for those that are coming in now, there's a lot of data. I've put together like a mahalach, a particular way of presenting this material. It's complicated. It's profound. But it's my job to try to make that as simple and as easy as possible for you. Which means if you don't understand what I'm explaining, you've got a button like where you can raise your hand. Where it says more, you've got like a raise hand question mark button. If you press that button, it will come up on your screen and I will see that you want to ask a question and I will come to you, okay? I want you to understand it. I don't want to answer corollary questions, but I've got to get through this material. It's very, very profound. Is everyone okay with that so far as an introduction? Could you turn on your video so I could see you thumb up if you can? Just put a thumb up icon. There's a button at the bottom in chat and you can say thumbs up or yes, or the yes button in the chat thing. You can just click yes. There we go. Oh, I even get a heart from Adrian Berkeley. I love you too. Thank you. Thank you. You can send me hearts as well. I'm fine with it. Where did we leave off? Where did we leave off last time? We left off last time at a bumbakasha, massive moment in Megillas Rus, massive moment last week, which is where Naomi reveals to Rus her destiny. And she says, really, look, this Boaz is a relative of ours. And we said, no, he isn't. He's not related at all, actually, to either of them now, because Naomi's husband, Elimelech, is dead. And Boaz is only related to the male side if he's going to be a redeemer. And all the more so he's not related to Rus. So she'd never have said ours. She's talking about her through Machlein, her son, who is alive as a spirit within Rus's body. And it's your destiny to marry Boaz and allow Machlon to come back into the world in another incarnation. And she's alluding to, from we saw Shlomo Shalom from Boaz, to bring forth the Jewish destiny of kings. What a day Rus has had. That's pretty, could you imagine being told that? That's pretty intense. So that's where we left off last week. And that was Pasuk 21, 2:21. Right? That's where we left off. That's where we left off. Now we're about to start 2:22, which is the very end of chapter 2, 22 and 23, right? But before I get into 22, I need to give you a running start. So do you know on a roller coaster, the first thing on any roller coaster is called the lift. That's the technical term for it. So you go on a roller coaster and you go chick, 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 chick. You go right like up a hill and then the roller coaster starts. Do you know when you get to the top of the hill, it kind of stops for a second and it goes like that. Do you know what I mean? We're at that precipice moment. Okay, so strap in, hold hard. This is where it's going to get intense. Okay, so focus. Okay, try to. We said last week at the end of Pasuk 21 that Shmuel Hanavi chided Rus for not correctly and truthfully quoting Boaz in the previous conversation she had with him. Therefore, she was deridingly called, pejoratively called, a Moabitess. And we said the reason for that was she didn't tell the whole truth about her discussion with Boaz. But there's another reason. There's another reason that Shmuel calls her for Ta'ima Rus HaMoaviyah. And then Rus the Moabitess said, which is very deriding. There's another reason Shmuel referred to her, Shmuel Hanavi being the author of Megillas Rus. Shmuel called her the Moabitess for a second reason that I didn't discuss with you last time. And I want to get into that to jump into verse 22 correctly. Rus was a reincarnation of Lot's daughter. We said that. We already know that. Moav means from my father. Moabitess means from my father. She was the girl that slept with her father in the cave in order to make Moav. Her sister came back as Naamah, the Ammonitess, who married Shlomo and had kings. So both Rus and Naamah are Gilgulim of the daughters of Lot, who had Moav and Ammon respectively. The older daughter had Moav. The younger daughter had Ammon. Are we with me so far? What those girls did was completely noble. And God gave it his shtempel, a haskama of kashrus. As far as they were concerned, all humanity was being annihilated. The only people left in the world was Lot and his two daughters. And in an act of selflessness, they wanted to perpetuate the human species. Everyone says the same thing. Everyone says that the girls were guiltless. Everyone says that. There's no shyla as to these people doing this. Now remember, he married out, like not that there was Jews and Gentiles back then, but he married a woman from Sodom, and she turned around and she died while Sodom was being destroyed. So these two girls weren't relatives of Avraham's family except by marriage. Lot, though, was a member of Avraham's family as a nephew. Now, before the prophet Shmuel tells us how Rus proved Naomi's convictions to be correct, that this Rus is indeed the good dove of Moab that has been prophesied about and that is going to be the progenitor of Jewish kings, the Shmuel has to dispel any reservations we might have harbored about Rus's ability to know about her identity, her uniqueness. Boaz's attitude towards her and the marriage he was contemplating are also very questionable at this point. After all, how could a holy Jewish spirit in the form of Machlon be lodged inside a Gentile body and find repose there? How can the pure blend with the impure? Hence, the prophet begins with that verse, Rus HaMoaviyah, Rus the Moabitess. She was not a common Moabitess. She was Ha! There's a definitive Hey. For Taima Rus HaMoaviyah, the definitive article, Moabitess. She's the special one. She's the chosen Moabitess. As the daughter of Lot, she had lain with her father for the sake of heaven alone, and now she has returned to this earth to receive her reward in this world. It's not difficult to accept that the Holy Spirit of Machlon could now find respite in her body. She was well aware of this now, and she understood the message behind Boaz's blessing. May God recompense you, as she said in verse 14. May God recompense you. In verse 14, if you roll back to verse 14, where we see Boaz interact, what does he say in verse 14? He says in, it's your Gimel, he says, come here and eat bread, dip your vinegar, she sat beside the reapers. And then he said before her, if before that actually, even may God recompense you, even before that, he said when he first met her, may God recompense you for the living and the dead. I think it was even earlier on. May God recompense you for what you've done with the living and the dead. That recompense is now alluded to by the Zohar as saying, may God recompense you for the deed you did when you slept with your father Lot. May God fulfill that destiny. Now, following that introduction, we are going to come as no surprise that Ruth is now able to confirm her mother-in-law's hopes about her identity and Boaz's connection to her. So the last pasuk last week was getting this mind-blowing concept that you are the good dove, the Moabites, who's come to this world to build up Jewish monarchy. Wow, big day. Then, once Ruth has absorbed this, she is going to say, well, what do you want me to do about it? So Naomi, in verse 22, Naomi replied to Ruth, her daughter-in-law. Now she's not Moavia. She's back being her daughter-in-law, i.e. familiarly related, because she's accepted the link with Machloin to Naomi. It is good, my daughter, says Naomi to Ruth, that you go out with his maidservants so that you will not be harmed in another field. That seems to be extremely basic health and safety. We already know it was basic, you know, it was a dangerous time and the boys could have molested her. Naomi's just saying, yeah, yeah, it sounds like good, you know, good Eitzah. Shmuel wasn't wasting a drop of ink. If he was writing this pasuk, which just seems to be basic health and safety, that it's good to hang around with these girls, we would have been able to divide that ourselves from earlier pasukim. What's going on? It's good for you to go out. You should, Dafka, be with Boaz. We've previously said that Boaz had told Ruth to stay with the womenfolk only as long as the first field was being harvested. In the rest of the field, she was to stay close to his servants who had been instructed not to bother or molest her. Now, Boaz did not want the women to guard her for 3 months. So Naomi deduced two facts from Ruth's words. One, so remember, Ruth gave over what she heard from Boaz. Naomi heard very deeply. Why was it 3 months that we're worrying about? The 3 months that we're worried about is we need to know that once a convert converts, they don't have any children for 3 months to make sure that we know that they aren't pregnant with a previous husband's seed. That there's no doubt that the pregnancy is done anew. So Ruth was not allowed to marry anyone for 3 months post-conversion. And she had just converted when she arrived at Boaz's field. So she's got to be hanging out in Boaz's field for 3 months. From what Boaz said to her, Naomi chapped a couple of important pshat level things. Number one, Boaz found that he had no option but to let her stay near these girls because he didn't want the women to remain in the fields for so long. We're not going to be harvesting here for 3 months, and I know you've got to be here for 3 months because you've just converted. Number two, Boaz already had intended to keep his options open to possibly marry Ruth. And Naomi has chapped up shut. Stick around for 3 months. I can't take the shidduch any further for 3 months. There's nothing more to discuss between you and me for 3 months. You've got to hang low for 3 months and not get molested. Hang out with my maidens. And if not them, someone else that I've told not to bother. But I want you to stick around because there's nothing to discuss if you leave between now and 3 months. So Naomi's response to Ruth was as follows. It's good for you to hang around the maidens. What's she really saying? I now understand from him telling you to hang around his maidens that he's got a potential to marry you. But let me tell you, that may not be such a good idea for you to associate with the servants. Because it's only going to bring you a bad reputation. And if you get a bad reputation, there's no way a man of the stature of Boaz is going to marry you. So even though he said, stay by the women folk, and then when they leave, hang around my boys, she doesn't say that. She says, you only stay by the women folk. Don't hang around the boys. Don't listen to him on that one. Because if you do, he'll never marry you. Do you understand what she's saying? It's good, my daughter, that you go out with his maidservants feminine. Do not listen to him and say, once those maidservants have left, hang around his men servants, and he says they won't bother you. Don't listen to him. Because if you do, over the period of 3 months, something is going to happen. And if there's even the slightest rumour that you've been a problem, there's no way Boaz will marry you. I'm telling you, keep your options open for the shidduch and only hang around the women. That's what she's telling. That's what Naomi's telling her. Good advice. Good advice. Do you hear this? Does everyone hear that point? Now, let's look at 23, which is the end of this perek. Vatidbak, literally devek, means to stick or to cleave. She stayed close. Literally, she stuck by Boaz's maidservants. She listened to Naomi and said, okay, if that's the plan, that eventually I'm going to marry this man and I've got to keep absolutely above board, I'll hang around the maidservants to glean until the end of the barley and wheat harvest, which is 3 months. I.e., I'll hang about getting myself ready for this shidduch. She dwelt with her mother-in-law. Why are we being told that? 3 months. 3 months. Very important. Now, we've explained at the end of chapter 1 that Naomi did not seek to find Rus a partner in life until the required 3 months of waiting after her conversion had passed. Right? She wanted to bide her time. Only now that the 3 months are over can you even think about Boaz, our relative, being considered a husband for you. So she's thinking like this. The whole concept of him being a husband doesn't even pop into reality for another 3 months' time, which means you're going to have to bide your time carefully for 3 months. Rus understands that's what it means. She dwelt with her mother-in-law. Read for 3 months. Now we're going into the next chapter. Chapter 3. We've passed the halfway mark, folks. Naomi. Oh, this is so... Read in, as the Midrash says, then, after 3 months, Naomi, her mother-in-law, for goodness sake, you treat us like children? You're treating me like a child? Every time Yitzhak is mentioned, do we have to know he's the son of Avraham? Do I have no memory of the entire first two prokim? How many times do you need to tell me she's her mother-in-law? It's getting tedious. Obviously, there's something going on. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter. I'm jumping to this. This is ridiculous. This is bad shit. If you're ever going to give a shear in this, don't follow what I'm about to do. Because I'm about to give you away the answer. I just can't keep it in. This is terrible. I should build up to it and then go, oh, look. And you go, oh, no, that's very clever. Read into this as follows. Then Naomi, listen to my words, even though she was her mother-in-law, even though she was her mother-in-law, that's what the Medrash says you should read, and we'll see why, said, my daughter, should I not seek security for you that you'll please you? Even though I'm your mother-in-law, I'm going to tell you this. That's the Medrash's pshat. That's how we have to read this pasuk. So then, after 3 months, Naomi, even though she's the mother-in-law, said, I should find you a shidduch. That's the pasuk. 3 months had gone by. And none of the blessings that Naomi has given Rus came to pass. Rus was lonely and so poor that she still had to dwell with her mother-in-law. And she must have wondered at this stage about the veracity of all the brachas Naomi gave her originally. Naomi herself, says the Medrash, felt very uncomfortable about the matter, that all her brachas had not come to fruition, and attempted at least to bring the second bracha to fruition, that Ruth should find some kind of security and contentment with a husband. Now, the last verse in the previous chapter emphasizes that she did not lodge with her or a husband, but with her mother-in-law, indicating that neither of the two blessings had been fulfilled. So that chapter calls her my daughter because she said to her, don't be concerned about the first blessing when I wish that you would find peace in your mother's house. You may be dwelling with your mother-in-law, but since I helped you convert to Judaism, you're now my daughter. For a convert is like a new kid, as we discussed. The Gemara says it's like a new child. My main task, however, is to see to it that you settle down happily in your own home, and that's my second bracha for you. Now, why is she saying this? Generally, a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law don't get on, to such an extent that in a court of law, we do not accept a mother-in-law's testimony about a daughter-in-law because we always assume she wants to harm her. So we can't accept it. She says, even though I'm your mother-in-law, who usually is not your best friend, I'm treating you like my daughter because I'm a guide you. So even though I'm your mother-in-law, I'm also your mother. I am your mother-in-law because I'm the mother of Machlon, who is alive in you, but I'm also your mother because I'm a guide you. And it's the element of motherhood that is now wishing for you these blessings. I'm going to see to it, I'm going to get you a shidduch. If I was your mother-in-law, I wouldn't give you tuppence. So I hate you. You stole my son. But as your mother, I quite like you and I want to see you married. Isn't that amazing? Rabbosai, where's my bell? I'm going to take a break. Bing! I'm taking a break. Last couple of parshas ago, Kisetse, we had the whole concept of Yibum. Yibum as an idea. I'd like to go through some notes that the Alshech HaKodesh says on the Torah, on Parshas Kisetse, chapter 25 of Devarim. Deuteronomy 25. Yeah? This is amazing. Listen to this. Listen to what the Alshech says. This is where I need you. I told you it's going to be mystical. This is where you have to strap in. Says the Alshech. This is also, by the way, mimicked by the Rambam. The Rambam says the same thing. Rambam, I could have read from either of them, but I'll do the Alshech. The only direct proof anywhere in the Torah that there is such a thing as Gilgul Neshama, transmigration of souls being reincarnated into different bodies, comes from the legislation of Levirate marriage, Yibum. When the Torah states that the child of the Levirate marriage will arise in lieu of the deceased uncle in order that his name not be blotted out in Israel, this directly refers to reincarnation. Rambam says it, Alshech says the Ramban, Nachmanides, keeps saying there's a very deep secret here. There's a very deep secret here. He keeps saying, I can't say which. There's a very deep secret. It's Gilgul Neshamas. This is where it comes from. Yibum. Now you might ask, whenever the Torah lists anything, even if it seems juxtaposed with odd things, there's always a reason why one mitzvah is next to another mitzvah. The connection between the legislation of Yibum and the next verse, which is not to muzzle the mouth of an ox while it's threshing in the field, which ostensibly is animal cruelty. Because if you tie up a muzzle and it's hungry and it can't eat, you're denying it food, it's hard. What's that got to do with Yibum? is to do with the difference between administering penalties in this world rather than in the world to come. Hear these words. It's a worth turning up moment. I don't have many of them, but this is one of them. This is worth taking your time out to come and listen. A person commits a transgression because he's unaware. He made a mistake. That's what a transgression is. He acts dumbly like a donkey or an ox who's dim-witted. Had you been fully aware of all the ramifications of committing a sin, he'd have never done it. If a person does not get punished for his sins until after death, then he'll be shamed publicly in front of all the souls in heaven for the sins he's committed. And his soul's embarrassment is far greater there than it would be here in the world of the living. Better for him that his stupidity should not be revealed by stopping him from threshing once he arrives in the next world. Since in the event a person leaves the world with his mission in life unaccomplished, his soul would have to return to earth one more time to complete its mission in another body. It's better that he should get punished for his intentional mistakes in this world, and this will spare him the need for a transmigration, a reincarnation, a Gilgul. And this may be the reason that the widow who enters into a Levirate marriage is described by the Torah as Ashes Hames, the wife of the dead, instead of Almonus Hames, the widow of the dead. She's still connected to him. It's like he's still there. We've got to sort it out. She's not the widow and removed. She's still married to him. So Yibum is an open discussion of the concept of reincarnation to allow a person to fix up what they need to do in this world to prevent them embarrassment in the next. Is everyone okay with that? Any question? Up until that point, is there any questions? The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh, Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh, he was a Talmid of Rabbi Karo, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch. He also got smicha. He got smicha from Rabbi Yosef Karo, which I'd like to say is pretty good. That's a pretty good smicha, isn't it? Also, after he learnt with Rabbi Yosef Karo, he then became a student of none other than the Arizal. He was the most popular preacher in his day, and people would take his words and print them as their own. So he rushed into print, and that's why all the printings of the Al-Sheikh are rife with spelling errors everywhere. There was no time to do copy edit. That's Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh that says this. So far, does that answer your question? Yes, Clive. I'm sorry, Clive, you have to unmute.
Sorry. Earlier on, you said that the children of Lot were not related to Avram, but they were, the two girls were his great nieces.
By marriage.
No, but as much as Lot was related to Avram as a nephew, the daughters
That's true. That's true, but only by marriage. You're right. They became family members. You're right. That's true. However, it was as if he had married out of the clan. In those days, they were trying to keep only to marry into their own families. Lot did not do that. Avraham was very careful. He married into his own family. He was very careful with Yitzchak. However, Lot, they got into an argument because Lot would not muzzle his flock. and theft was a problem because Lot and Avraham looked very, very similar. People were saying Avraham's a thief. And that was something he just couldn't deal with. He said, listen, go where you want to go. I'll go wherever we can't. Okay, so he left. He went to Sodom and he married a local. That was something that was not okay for Avraham's family to do. You're right, of course, being Lot's descendants, they are now retroactively genetically connected to Avraham. But they were, as it were, outside the family.
And the oldest daughter was the Gilgal of Ruth.
That's right. And the younger one became Naamah, the Ammonitess, because she had Ammon. She married Shlomo and had kings through him. So both of them were involved in the building of the monarchy of Israel as reward for what they did to keep humanity alive. God said, what you did was good, and I'm going to give you both a Gilgal reward that both of you will have kings as children. Kings will descend from you. You've saved humanity. I'll give you your just reward.
And they brought the Kodesh back from that had been lost from Lot.
That's right. That's correct. Okay. Right. Now that we've done the intro to Yibam from the Al-Sheikh on Parshas Kisetse, chapter 25 of Devarim, let's go back to Rus. Because the whole content of Yibam is even openly about reincarnation. I mean, that's it. It's open, and it's the only place we ever talk about it anywhere in the Torah openly. Openly. The Zohar, volume 2, page 100, side B. This stuff is intense. This is really, really mystical, okay? It says as follows. A reincarnated soul is on a lower level spiritually than when it was first brought into the world. You may have heard the idea of Eurydice Hadoiris, a descent or a slipping of the generations. Every generation is on a subsequently lower level than the prior one. So the people that stood at Har Sinai were greater than us because they were on, it's basically all about coming back to Mount Sinai. So much so, halachically, people who published their responsa prior to the publication of the Shulchan Aruch in 1515 CE cannot be argued on by those who publish their responsa later. That's a Rishon versus an Achron. If I became the greatest halachic responsa of the general, I could never argue on a Rishon. It's out because they're so much loftier than you can't approach them. You can't. They're just, and the sages of the Mishnah cannot be argued on by the sages of the Gemara. Each generation's level is seeping downwards towards a spiritual impoverishment from the previous. When you have a Gilgal, you always go forward in time. We'll learn that out from Yonah. Anyone who wants to listen to the Yonah Shir, you'll see that in the third perek. You always go forward in time, never backwards. Which means when you're going forward in time, there's always Eurydice Hadoiris. Which means you're now going to be a baby versus the other people. You're going to be on a lower spiritual level than the previous generation you were on prior. Everyone okay with this so far? Now listen really carefully. A man's wife, however, rises to a higher level than before. And when their souls are reincarnated, the wife becomes the mother of her former husband in their second existence. A wife is reincarnated as the mother to her former husband. Adam and Eve were reincarnated as Yaakov and Rivka, respectively. Rivka was Eve, and she became the arena of the war of both Yaakov and the snake who were gestating in her as Adam reincarnated as Jacob and the snake reincarnated as Esav. And that's why her pregnancy was so hard. She was the mother of Yaakov, but in a previous Gilgul, she was his wife. Big secret being revealed here of the system, how it works. Our sages say that Naomi was called Naomi because she was pleasant. Naam. Literally just means nice. Dachei Naam. Nice place, nice ways. It's nice. We have also learnt in general that a mother-in-law is rarely on good terms with her daughter-in-law. And it will not, and they, she definitely won't go out of her way to do favours for her. So much like that's a Gemara in Yavamas, page 117a, that she can't even testify in court about her. In our verse, right here, that we're dealing with, Shmuel Hanavi, who's writing this, defends Naomi against any accusation that might have been levelled against her for attempting to marry Rus off to an elderly man like Boaz. You might have read this and go, ah, that's a nice trick for a mother-in-law to marry off a young woman to an octogenarian. Ha! She stipped her good and proper. You'll read that and think that. Now, you should know, how old was Boaz? Boaz's name was Itzvan, and his name was Boaz as a nickname, meaning two strengths. Boi, two eyes, strengths. One is he brought the Shekhinah back to Israel. Two is he finished the famine. And three, he had the war. Now, how old was he? According to one opinion, he was in his 80s, which is generally how we go. But according to Sefer Hadoros, the Book of Generations, it clearly proves that he was either 300 or 400 years old. Now, I don't like to say that because it's so extreme that people can't get their heads around it. So it's easy to say he was an 80-year-old. But others say he was over 300. You take a young, beautiful Gioras and you marry her to a 300-year-old. That sounds like the deeds of a mother-in-law. Yes, it does. Now, you're going to read that and think, that must have been a great relationship they had. Yeah, there must have been quite a lot of bickering in those 3 months. The prophet Shmuel is telling us, don't think like that. Don't think like that. You might have thought like that, but even worse, you might have said about Naomi that she wanted to bring shame and disgrace upon her to lie at the feet of Boaz. That is the most disgusting. Who would tell their daughter-in-law to do that? It seems that she wasn't interested in finding Rus a suitable partner, but was only concerned with her being able to calm the disturbed spirit of her dead son. Couldn't care less about Rus. We've got to get Mahlon into a new body. Who's the person that can do it? Boaz. Go to Boaz. I couldn't care less about you. I want my son to have repose. That's what you might have thought about Naomi. Quite justifiably. When Rus entered into Yibum, it would again come into the world in the form of their son. So Shmuel lays down the truth for all, and he says it black and white. Then Naomi said, Naomi, who was pleasant in her ways, she said, it didn't say her mother-in-law said, Naomi, this pleasant woman said, even though she was the mother-in-law, she addressed her as my daughter. In fact, the trop as to how you sing this, the cantillation, is called a zakef godel. And that indicates that you hit the word very hard. With the word biti, my daughter, you scream that. That's a tough trop. And that indicates that Naomi said this, don't regard me as your mother-in-law, you're my daughter. Because Mahlon resides in you, I see you as my daughter. And her main intention was not necessarily for her son, even though she wanted her son to be reborn, but finding Rus a partner was just as much an important thing to her. Which she said, I've got to get you that bracha. Yes, of course, I'm interested in my son getting reborn through Yibam. But I also want you to enjoy the comfort of having your own home. And I'm talking to you like a mother, not like a mother-in-law. Now we get to verse 2. Let's do verse 2 and 3 together as a set. Now, va'ata. There's so much to say. We don't need that word, right? Boaz, our relative, with whose maidservants you've been. Notice maidservants, not manservants, because you listened to me in the previous Pesukim and you didn't hang out with the boys, which means you're still kosher for the Shidduch, will be winnowing barley tonight on the threshing floor. Wash yourself, anoint yourself, and don your clothes. Would you think she would walk across fields naked? Why does she need to be told to don her clothes? Then go down to the threshing floor and do not make yourself known to the man, i.e. Boaz, until he has finished eating and drinking. Is this the way you get a shidduch? I'm talking to you as a mother. I mean only the best for you. Go and stealthily skulk about in the dead of night and approach a man with immodesty. Why couldn't she get a shadchan? There's no shadchanim left in the world. Why couldn't she go herself to Boaz and explain the situation and keep Rus out of business? And even then, worst comes to worst, tell Rus to go and speak to Boaz. No. Wait until the middle of the night, then stealthily sneak in. This whole thing is perplexing in the extreme. There's so much thought. There's so much thought about this. The Alshech HaKodesh asks, where have all the Shadchanim gone? Were there no matchmakers left in the people of Israel that Naomi had to retort to such behavior? It says like this. Such a person could have told Boaz her life story. The Shadchan would go up and give a whole spiel about Rus and how she'd been chosen to remain with her mother-in-law after her husband's death, how she had left her home to join the ranks of the Jewish people and take refuge under God's wings, as it were, and then convinced Boaz to take such a girl and build a Jewish home with her. Even if there was no one to suggest this match, couldn't Naomi have gone and spoken to him? In actual fact, Naomi was extremely wise in what she had said. She acted extremely inspired. It says Ruach HaKodesh told her to do this. And it can be safely said that any convert other than Rus would not have been a suitable match for Boaz, who was not only the great leader of Israel, but according to our sources, he was the head of the Sanhedrin. Now, I'm sorry. He's just lost his wife. Okay, a year ago, he lost his wife. It's fitting now that he should get another shidduch. You would not necessarily think that the Av Sanhedrin and the chief rabbi of all Israel would marry a Gioris, especially Moabites. That's just the way it is. But Rus was unique. There was no one like her. She was destined by divine choice to become the woman where the house of David would be built. And she had been chosen because as the daughter of Lot, who had intimate relations with her own father for the sole purpose of preventing mankind from becoming extinct, she had earned this right. What does it say in the Pasuk in Genesis 19:32? Let us preserve seed from our father. She was hinting to the Mashiach. She meant to say, says the Medrash, that the seed which was to become the Mashiach should be brought about through their actions. It was then that these two were destined for greatness. she became Rus, her sister became Naama. Rus was a product of Moab, designated by God to bring forth the Mashiach. She is a very suitable match for Boaz, but the whole thing's highly unusual. Now, Naomi has found evidence to support her hunch in the way that Boaz has addressed Rus after he noticed her great righteousness and modest behavior. But she wasn't sure if Boaz knew that she was this special good dove from Moab. The way to establish this was to note the way he behaved in her company. If he shows little or no interest in her, it was proof that he didn't regard her as the good dove. Now, Naomi wasn't sure if her presumption was correct either. So she said to herself, if I approach Boaz about Rus myself, or send a shadchan while he himself is in doubt, he'll surely reject the idea out of hand. So her intuition led her to send Rus directly to where Boaz lay and uncover his feet. Notice she told him, uncover his feet. What does the Torah say when the daughters approached Lot? Let us uncover his feet. All of Rus's actions have to be carried out for the sake of heaven as a divine test. Because if Boaz was the relative designed to redeem her, she had to find that out about Rus as well. Is Boaz up to scratch? Now, Naomi was extra careful in what she said to Rus. The meeting would have to take place at night after the meal, when no one would notice her arrival. Thus, she would have to go in stealth. Now, it was hoped that Boaz would be led to understand that Rus was descended from the daughter of Lot, and as the saying goes, like mother, like daughter. A daughter's deeds are like those of the mother, says Kasubas. So a careful look at the episodes revealed striking similarities. People, listen to this, you're going to love it. Lot's daughter came in stealth to her father when he was sleeping. She laid bare her father's legs. And everything she did for the sake of heaven. Rus comes in stealth after revealing Boaz's feet to lay close to him. He must have concluded, this is a daughter following a daughter. This is the dove from Moab. She had now, it's amazing, light on, it's very interesting. On both occasions, the deeds were done with pure and holy intentions. When Rus immediately agreed to do as she was asked, Naomi realized that her faith in her daughter-in-law was fully justified. What Gioris would do such a thing? If you told a woman who's just come to Judaism this madcap idea of approaching an aged Rav at night to do this, she'd say, you've gone fry on me. I'm frumer than you. When she chapshat saying this is exactly what I did in my previous life, she knew she's the one. Only the good dove of Moab would agree to this. When she actually came to do the deed, Boaz knew for certain she was the good dove. They did not have relations at the time. We'll see that from the Loshen. There's no way they had relations, Rus and Boaz. What they were saying is you ought to take me as a husband. And you ought to take me as a wife. I.e. it's symbolic. Put me under your raiment. He said, yeah, 100%, I'll marry you. Very strange instructions. Why did she say he's going to be winnowing barley? Who cares? Who cares what he's going to be doing? Why say wait until he's finished eating? Why say take a note of where he's going to sleep? What's going on? Very interesting stuff. That night, Boaz was busy helping the workers to pile up the bushels of grain. And he'd made his bed next to the pile where the rest of the labourers were at some distance from him. In Rus Rabba, it says Boaz, I think I've mentioned this to you before, wished to guard the grain from his workers who would usually steal it in order to finance their nocturnal meetings with women of ill repute. So the pile itself acted as a partition, blocking out the view of Boaz from all these boys. It was like a wall, and he was sleeping on the other side of it. They knew if they nicked some of it, he'd wake up. So he was beating two birds with one stone. One is he was protecting them from doing theft. Two is he was protecting them from doing znus, immoral behaviour, with the proceeds of theft. So it was right for him to do that. Why did she tell Rus to wash herself? This is the discussion of so much medrash, and so I can't tell you pages and pages of medrash on the concept of washing. An anointing. What is anointing and washing and donning clothes? The bottom line, I know we're running short on time, is like this. She's telling her, the medrash says outright, wash yourself of idolatry. Remember, when the angels came to visit Abraham, he asked to wash their feet because the Arabs in those days, who were polytheistic, used to worship the dust of their feet as an idol. So he said, let me wash your feet before you come into my house. There's no idols in my house. When she said, wash yourself, she said, wash yourself of idolatry. Now, the obvious question on the Medrash is, she's already converted and been frum for 3 months. How much more idolatry do you need to wash off? What do we learn out from this? If an individual in their past has committed an act of idolatry, even if they convert in the interim and become a new person, the stain of idolatry is so indelible that it's almost impossible to remove. So what she was saying was reinvigorate your fealty to Hashem and remove yourself from your previous idolatrous past completely. It's like when you go to a bris, Eliyahu Hanavi is there. When he's there, you've got to get forgiven for your sins. You've got to do a new tshuva, even though you're frum. And even though you're Jewish, do another tshuva in the fact that you were involved in idolatry. Be super clean at this moment. This moment is the most important moment of your life. And if there's any impurity involved in it at all, it will trigger what is essentially looking like an externally impure act. And it will sully it to the level of impurity. I need you to be pristine. Wash yourself of any negativity in your mind whatsoever. That means you need to do a super tshuva. I want, even though you're a Gioris, I want you to go back and say, I'm sorry I ever went to church. I need you to do that now. Again, otherwise, when you go and light Boaz's feet, this thing is going to go amok. It's like an indelible stain. That's what it means to wash herself. The fact that she had converted was not enough. A further cleansing process was needed to be free enough from sin to do something which ostensibly looks like a sin, completely lishma. What's anoint yourself? Whenever we anoint ourselves, it's always to do with the doing of mitzvahs and good deeds. That's what it means to anoint yourself, to make yourself beautiful, is to do mitzvahs. How was it possible for Rus to do all these things in such a short time? Her intentions would be considered by God as if she had done the deed itself. She said, I want to do mitzvahs, I want to do tzedakah. She took it on at that moment. I'm going to anoint myself with a desire to do mitzvahs. She needs that extra strength and she needs to be totally clean to go and do what she's about to do. The clothing is unbelievable. There's a lot to discuss basically about the clothing. She couldn't borrow clothing from anyone else because anyone else would say, what do you need the clothing for? So she had to use her clothing. Use only your clothing. Also, she was completely clothed from head to foot, totally like a burqa, so that no one should see her at all on the way while she was moving towards the through the field to Boaz, to the barn. Who else completely covered herself in a burqa and moved about in a public place? Ten points on this one. Tamar clothed herself in a burqa with a veil and went out on the crossroads to meet Yehuda. Boaz is a Gilgul of Yehuda. Boaz is Yehuda. Rus is Lot's daughter. If he, also a princess, like Tamar, if he now utilizes this time with Rus completely l'shem shemayim and doesn't touch her, which is what happened, he'll be metaken what happened with Tamar, even though he was overcome at that time. All loose ends are being tied up. Yehuda and Tamar, Lot and the daughters, David and Bathsheba's linked to it. It's all one idea, and it's all bringing Mashiach out. And when he lies down, note the place where he lies and go. Uncover his feet and lie down. He will then tell you what to do. Whew, that sounds like a pretty risky activity for a frum young woman. We are going to learn about why all these instructions have to be given to the letter and why she must do those things to the letter or everything's going to break. The Zohar says, your clothes in the next world are your deeds of righteousness. You're garbed in your good deeds only. If you didn't have any good deeds, you're naked. Why did Naomi say, put on your clothes? Says the Zohar, she's saying to Rus, this is your moment. Put on your clothes. These are going to be, think about it. If you met Rus in Olam HaEmes, in Shemaim, what would you think about her? Would you think about the fact she's a mother? You'd think she's the one that went to Boaz and married Boaz, wouldn't you? That's the big deal, right? That's her big thing. This is her clothing. This is how you'd recognize her. This is her badge. Put on your clothes. This is your moment, says Naomi. This is now going to be your garb in Olam Haba. Put on your... Take your moment. This is your time. Put on your clothes, not anyone else's. Don your clothes. Like your raiment, your majesty, your cape. This is going to be your denouement moment. If this goes well, it's going to be great. If it goes bad, it's going to be horrendous. People are going to call you a harlot. No one's going to marry you. You're going to just become obscure and disappear. If this goes great, you're going to become the mother of all royalty. You're going to fix up Light. You're going to fix up Yehuda. You're going to fix up Tamar. You're going to fix up Mashiach. Everything's going to be great. Everything is riding on this razor's edge. You've got to do exactly what I'm telling you. She's going to give her a warning, a double warning. We're going to see in Pasuk 4, verse 4, she's going to be very stern with her. She's going to say, you've got to do it exactly as I'm telling you. You make, like, literally a bad move anywhere, you've ruined the whole thing. 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 are a block. And Be'ezus Hashem, we're going to do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, which really is the crux moment of how he deals with Rus and what he says he's going to do the next day to organize a marriage. What's going on? What's happening? Why do we have to know what time it is? About midnight? Who cares what time's on the clock? So many things are happening here. Why is Rus willing to humiliate herself in this act? Even if she's doing it in Ishma, like Light was asleep in her previous Gilgul, She's going to have to, she doesn't want, she's going to have Boaz awake. This is very embarrassing. He's got to speak to her, not have any relations with her. She's got to say, I need a shidduch. And she's got to somehow convince this 80 or 300 year old man to take her as a wife. How's this going to happen in the middle of the night? What are you expecting to happen here? All the words of the next pasuk must be read very closely to understand how the Mashiach and Yibum and Boaz and Lot and Yehuda are all going to get to... There's so much to hold cop on. You've got to hold cop on the main storyline. Like, what's going on? Why would Ruth do that? You've got to hold cop on Naomi trying to get Mahlon back in the world. You've got to hold cop on Ruth fulfilling her destiny. You've got to hold cop on Boaz fixing up Yehuda. You've got to hold cop on Lot's daughter fixing up what's going on with Lot. All at the same time, all these narratives are happening in the same psukim. There's like multiple themes all occurring at the same time. And you've got to read it understanding all of those themes at the same time. And what Shmuel is telling us about each one of the narratives, how things are changing. It's a big task, no? Ezra Shem will continue on chapter 3, verse 4, next time. Anyone got any questions or anything we've done on this topic so far? Wow, that's no, we don't like it. Okay, people, it's been amazing. Please, God, I'll see you next week. Any questions, you can email it in if you want. You know where I am, not running away. But please, God, we'll, remember, next week is the... You've got to turn up next week. Because next week is where it all slots in. She meets Boaz. Boaz interfaces with her. He talks to her. She talks to him. He realizes who she is, what's going to happen, what they're going to do, the whole thing. It's like, this is it. This is the crux moment of Rus. So tune in for next week.